United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Jane A. Rustani presiding before court number 22-00231, Ryzen Energy Company Limited et al. Versus the United States. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Gregory Menegas of Dekeefer Horgan for Ryzen Energy Co. Limited.
And Alexander Sullivan from Dekeefer and Horgan, also on behalf of Ryzen.
Brian Franco from Wayne Grimson on behalf of JA Solar Technology Yanzhou Company and the other JA Solar affiliates, collectively JA Solar.
Theo Lee from Wayne Grimson, also representing JA Solar.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Joshua Perlin on behalf of the United States, accompanied by Spencer Neff from the Department of Commerce.
All right. Please be seated, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a lot of law clerks in the back. I don't know that we have any confidential information. Okay. Just, you know, they're sworn to secrecy, but just in case you don't want to spread confidential information far and wide. Okay. New law clerks, getting started with the new term, so they get to see an argument. All right. Who's going to start? And you are arguing for
Ryzen.
Okay.
Thank you. Alexandra Salzman on behalf of Ryzen. Jumping right into the judge's questions as issued, which seem to primarily be concerning export buyers and Ryzen's situation. To address your first question on whether there has been any evidence of anyone ever receiving the EBC program in commerce proceedings, no. The department has never found any evidence whatsoever in any case of a U.S. customer benefiting or applying from this. And that has only continued as the department has started to issue these more detailed questionnaires to customers, and they've replied and found no information. Even in the couple times that Commerce has verified customers, they've also found no evidence of this program, no application of this program, no understanding of this program that anyone has ever received it in a Commerce proceeding. Which is a key point in our lens to continue to view Commerce's perspective through their approach to this case. Looking at your second question regarding Yama Ribbons and Commerce's questionnaire, it is the same questionnaire. There's a generic questionnaire that Commerce issues in every CVD case. It alters a little bit based on the LTAAR programs, but as far as the EBC program, it's exactly the same. So the GOCN respondents.
I might not totally understand Yama. I haven't studied it in detail. But I thought that the judge found a problem with one of the follow-up questionnaires, or maybe it was the original questionnaire, that didn't ask for Yama's customers. Was that the problem?
The questionnaire is, you can see it's exactly the same. The initial questionnaire is exactly the same as ours, where they ask questions about the customers. They don't ask for information from the customers in the initial questionnaire.
Okay.
And it is the same one that was issued in Yama. Same confirmation of, requests of list all your customers, detail the role your company plays in assisting customers, have any of your customers used buyer credits. Those are the questions that are asked. The same ones asked to Yama were asked to Ryzen, in which they reported, no, none of our customers have used this program.
Are you saying that there was that the GOC did not get a question that would have been directed to Ryzen? I don't know what I asked if the questionnaire, what I was trying to get out was the defect in the questionnaire that the court found, or in one of the questionnaires that the court found in Yama.
Okay.
Did that defect exist here? I guess first we have to figure out what was the defect, and then we figure out whether it existed here. So what's your answer?
I'm afraid, based off of the court's question, I was not looking at whether there had been a defect in the questionnaire. I just looked at whether the questionnaires were the same.
Well, that's what I want to know.
I'm sorry.
It seems to me that Judge Dansu said that there was a defect in the questionnaire that went to Yama, at least a defect in the sense that what Yama answered was not, what GOC answered was not unresponsive.
Yes, and that would be the same here. My understanding is from Yama's, the Judge Dansu's opinion in that case was finding that the GOC's answers to the questions, which are the same in the initial questionnaire, were responsive. Like he discussed the administrative procedures and the fact that what Commerce has provided explains that these were not the type of, this is enough information for Commerce to analyze. And so all of that would still apply to this case. Just turning over to that opinion. But all of the same information, he said the administrative measures and the EBC implementation rules were all evidence put on the record in response to the EBC questionnaire that he found were evidence that they had not used it, and that the same information is on this questionnaire. Sorry, to the extent that I have to answer that, it is the same questionnaire, and the GOC provided the same information that we would submit would be adequate to find non-use between that and the respondents' questionnaires.
Your Honor, I can answer Your Honor's question about this.
So come up.
Okay. You can answer that, and then I'll come back.
Okay. So to Your Honor's question, in YAMA, the court looked in detail and looked at the first questionnaire. The first questionnaire had 7 questions that are identical to the questionnaire that was issued to the GOC here. The court found that those questions included clarifying language that said essentially you don't have to answer these questions if you find the mandatory respondents didn't use the program. Here, too, the questionnaire was the same, had that same clarifying language, and the GOC responded and answered certain questions relating to the operation that hadn't changed. So the question says, has the operation changed? If it hasn't, you don't need to answer these questions. If the mandatory respondents haven't used it, you don't need to answer. And so the court in YAMA found that the GOC didn't fail to comply with that based on those general questions saying that, no, this isn't applicable. What the YAMA court said the GOC may have failed to comply with was there was a supplemental questionnaire issued, and that supplemental questionnaire asked for a list of banks, a list of the administrative program, and giving more detail about how they checked. There was no supplemental question here issued here. So as there was no supplemental questionnaire, there was no evidence on the record and no reasonable reading that the GOC did not cooperate fully, because the response, essentially Commerce said they didn't provide the standard questions appendix, they didn't provide a list of partner banks, and they didn't submit the 2013 administrative revisions. But considering the general questionnaire said you do not need to respond, there's no evidence they didn't comply with not supplying that information. And even
there was no supplemental questionnaire in this case.
Nope. And that's the difference. And even putting aside what the GOC found, that what the court found in YAMA that the GOC didn't provide, the court ultimately concluded that information wasn't necessary. And they looked at the list of partner banks and said, well, that's not actually going to be helpful because you need a sample application and a paper trail to see how it works. And if no one's using that program, you're essentially trying to prove a negative. So they're not going to have that. And they also found...
Are you representing JA?
Yes, JA.
Okay. All right. Did anybody in this case argue that I think once upon a time, somewhere or another, the government was saying that, hey, the respondent might not know that the customers were using this program. And I think Judge Stansu said, oh, yes, they would,
that's
under administrative rule number 14 or something or other.
Correct.
Did anybody in this case argue?
We did. We did in our opening case brief, and then the government actually requested a voluntary remand for J.A. Solar, but in our opening brief, it was because...
You had one customer, right?
Exactly,
okay.
And they can verify that.
A little easier problem. All right, now I understand. I have so many of these tell me what it is again, EBCT cases that I can't remember which arguments are made in what, which one. Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Now we'll let you come back.
Thank you. And RISM also argued that RISM would have known if they had benefited from an EBC program. We also argued that in our opening brief.
And RISM said no. Okay.
Yeah, we would know, and said that in our questionnaire responses that we would know.
Now, what else you want to tell me about?
Moving to the next two questions that are more directed at RISM's situation in particular, Your Honor asked if the customer certifications were in response to Section F of the questionnaire. Shouldn't that trigger 1677MD, which, yes, that is something we have argued in our briefs as well, that it should have, since even though the questionnaire did not specifically request certifications, it was submitted in response to these questions asking about whether the customers benefit from the program. And so if Commerce had actually found a deficiency in that response, then they would have been obligated under this regulation to then provide an opportunity for RISM to respond to that deficiency. However, that never occurred. And even if Commerce found in the first instance that the certification should have been required, as you said throughout our briefing, then Commerce should have issued a deficiency questionnaire in response to that question in general, finding that and allowing RISM an opportunity to remedy. But that is not what happened, which arrived at your question number 4 about the missing certification. Yes, RISM did attempt to submit the fourth. I had 4 customers at the public fact on this record. Isn't it 4 customers? The fourth one, they did not have in time to submit for the initial questionnaire, and we tried to submit it later in time in December, and it was rejected as new information. We did receive it after the initial deadline, but it was not as late as December. There were 2 reasons why RISM did not try to submit it earlier than December. One was not actually having an opportunity to submit it, and 2 was also understanding the Commerce's position at that time and the CIT president at that time. RISM did not understand that having that last certification would have made a difference based on the way that Commerce was approaching this case at the time and the way the CIT was approaching, which I'll go into more detail on both those points. First, parties aren't allowed to submit information to the record at any point. It has to be in response to specific things laid out in the regulation. It has to be in response to a questionnaire that's been issued, or in rebuttal to an allegation, or a benchmark data for an LTAR program, so information of value and measure the adequacy of remuneration for, like, land, for example. In this case, would be an example of information you could submit. So this type of a certification does not fall under any of those. We were hoping and waiting for Commerce to issue a supplemental questionnaire related to the EBC program, but they never did. So there was never an opportunity for RISM to put the certification forward. And when it came down to...
Something I want to ask you. Yes. Under one of the regulations, you can put some kind of information in all the way up to just before the
days.
Preliminary. And what kind of information is
That's what I was saying about benchmark. There's also surrogate value stuff, but we'll put that aside. For CBD information to for the measuring the adequacy of remuneration for LTAR programs. So those are the like the land programs and import raw material programs or energy programs where you're allowed to submit
an exception to the general rule.
Right. So you have up until 30 days before to submit benchmark information, for example, on that type of thing. So this, 1, EBC is not an LTAR program, and 2, this isn't related to measuring the adequacy of a program, the certification of non-use. So we needed a questionnaire in order to submit this. We could have tried to submit it under the catch-all. There is a catch-all where you can submit information and ask Commerce, please accept it. We want to submit this information. So there's that last one, but Commerce has to then approve and accept it. So we could have attempted to do that. RISM did not have the hindsight to try to submit it earlier because of the precedent at the time, and we also submit it would have been futile.
Well, what kind of information is usually accepted under this catch-all?
I have not seen that being successful ever in my experience. Yeah, I've never seen anyone successfully submit information under the catch-all.
Yeah, I think the way the dance usually goes is you ask Commerce to ask you.
Yeah.
Then you're responding to a request from Commerce.
Right.
Isn't that how the dance normally goes?
Yes. And again, like in hindsight, we would have, could have attempted that, but we would submit that considering Commerce rejected when we did submit it to the record, that that would have been a futile attempt, which also gets to our second point of understanding what was going on in the practice of EDC at the time. At that time, Commerce was not issuing this detailed supplemental EDC questionnaire on a regular basis. It had happened very rarely, as came up in the briefing. Page 5 to 7 of our reply brief, we get into that in more detail. In the prior reviews, RISM had submitted certifications for all of its customers, never received a questionnaire, Commerce found AFA. So, and likewise, the CIT cases at the time were not turning on whether you put in certifications or not. For example, the earlier YAMA ribbon, not the one in your question, there weren't even any certifications in that case at all. And the judge still ruled that there was no evidence on the record, and Commerce in each of those remands was still just saying under protest, fine, we find non-use. So that was the climate of CIT and Commerce precedent at the time, was that the certifications weren't being looked at and weren't being critical. And so RISM also for that reason did not try and keep asking Commerce, please issue us a questionnaire, because it was not understood to be important. And we also submit, as before, that it would not have helped given the fact that Commerce rejected it later anyways. And just lastly, we would also submit, even in December, when we submitted that cert, it would not have been too late to issue a supplemental questionnaire to RISM on this issue or even verify. The final results were 7 months later. There was a lot of time between them knowing that all of our customers had certifications and were putting forward that they had not benefited from this program and when the final results were. And then just a last two key points on this issue that we brought up in our briefing was that Commerce should have been obligated to request these certifications if it was going to be a requirement in order to ask for more information. That was never requested. And second, there's not a reasonable explanation why Commerce couldn't issue an EBC questionnaire with or without these certifications, or issued the EBC questionnaire just to the ones that had a certification. There was a lot of area between all or nothing, and Commerce went for nothing. With that?
Yeah, I think maybe we'll just do this issue by issue. Does anybody from your side, have you said everything you want to say?
I have a couple more points.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll let JA Solar, before I hear from the government, and do I have a dependent intervener? No, okay, yeah. Just the government. Okay, before I hear from the government, okay, tell me what else you want to tell me.
Try and be brief.
You're going.
We're at the voluntary remand. The only point.
I mean, yeah.
The only
kind of won at this point, haven't you?
The only point I'll make, again, to just Gia First Honor's question, just to echo what my colleague said, we haven't seen any evidence. On the second point, we have the government issued a voluntary remand, and we told the government we consent, but we've also said with the YAMA case offers a stipulation that maybe the government shouldn't be able to reopen the record and to issue a supplemental questionnaire to JA Solar and just based on the facts of the record find that JA Solar didn't use the program. And the reasoning being that you have that first questionnaire and then you had the second questionnaire, and that's where there was missing information, but you don't have that second questionnaire. Here, the government, the GOC, put on the implementing regs and also the administrative regs, which show that an exporter would know if they used the program.
So what's your concern here? It's going to go back. Your one customer, I guess, is certified that they didn't use it. I guess they'll want to verify.
Correct.
Then you just don't want to go through a verification?
Only because Commerce has previously verified JA Solar 2 reviews ago, found they didn't use the program, and then it's the same sales trace. So based on YAMA, we think there's even more reason here that the court could stipulate that we really don't need to do a verification. Yeah. That being said, JA Solar has said in its response it's happy to comply and willing to comply, but there is reason.
Well, when you're willing to comply, send in all the customers' records, have them march around the customer's office?
And the JA Solar,
really?
If we have to, we will do that. Our preference would not be based on Commerce previously verifying. JA Solar is only one customer, so that is why Commerce is willing to. It's an affiliated retailer.
There is a big difference between YAMA in this case, and that is that's ribbons and bows, and this is something that might actually be covered by the program that used the EBC program, even though nobody used it.
Yep.
That is a difference.
And
maybe not a difference in the questionnaire, but it's a difference in the case.
And acknowledged. But there is.
Ribbons and bows are going to help rebuild Africa. So anyway.
Yeah. So that is only our. That we think, based on YAMA, there could be a stipulation here.
Okay.
That's our question.
All right. Government.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I, too, intend to direct the majority of my comments to Your Honor's questions on the Export Buyer's Credit Program and the land issue. We're also prepared to address the Article 26.
It's EBCP now. We'll get to
right, okay. Right. And maybe just to address JA Solar first, because that's kind of a more cabined issue with voluntary remand. I want to be clear that I don't believe at this time that Commerce has determined whether they would require JA Solar to go through a full verification. As counsel mentioned, Commerce did very recently verify JA Solar in the 2017 case, and we were, I suppose you could say, lawyerly with our language in the voluntary remand request, indicating that Commerce would like to reconsider its determination and, if appropriate, proceed to verification on JA Solar. And I don't
think there's anything such as a voluntary remand request. You have a remand request. If you ask for a remand, it means you have a legal compulsion to ask for a remand. There's something happened that makes you ask for it. You don't come willy-nilly volunteering. I take it, in this case, there's a change in policy. You don't want to look at customers. You're only going
correct.
Right.
Correct.
So that, since you changed your policy, you need to ask for a remand.
Fair enough.
And it will be granted.
Fair enough, Your Honor. I don't know if this is a better terminology or not. Maybe the better way to put it is affirmative remand request. We're not waiting for the court to tell us.
I'll take that.
But in any case,
we do these things because the law requires us to.
Fair enough. I'm not making any promises. I'm not saying we absolutely will not verify JA Solar, but I'm also not saying that we are dead set on verifying JA Solar. It is possible,
okay,
certainly, the
you.
Commerce would issue a questionnaire at the very least.
You ask
whether
for a remand, you'll get a remand.
Fair enough.
You have a good reason.
Fair enough. Okay, Your Honor. Moving on to Your Honor's question with respect to RISN and the Export Buyer's Credit Program. Your Honor's first question was whether Commerce, I guess in the past, has found that any United States buyer has benefited from the Export Buyer's Credit Program. I parenthetically assumed aside from an AFA determination. And the answer is
no, I don't want to know about AFA. I want to know, like, reality.
Right. The answer is, Your Honor, we are not aware of an occasion on which the Commerce has found that. It does come with an important caveat, which is that nearly all of these determinations have proceeded to AFA because of the lack of cooperation issues. It is obviously only more recently that companies have begun providing non-use certifications, and only more recently than that Commerce has begun verification. So I don't think it would be fair to say that the fact that Commerce hasn't found it as a factual matter in a previous case means that it's not used or not happening. But Your Honor asked the question, and that's the answer.
Yeah, okay. That's a fair answer.
To go to Your Honor's second question about YAMA ribbon, I think we would agree with much of what Mr. Senko said in his description of the YAMA ribbons decision, with a few important caveats. At the risk of slightly repeating what Mr. Senko said, my understanding of at least the first part of Judge Stansu's decision is that Judge Stansu analyzed the initial questionnaire that Commerce had sent to the government of China in that case, which is the same language as the initial questionnaire to the government of China in this case. They're the same language. Judge Stansu interpreted that questionnaire in a way that I think is slightly unfair to Commerce, which may be our one disagreement there, which is he interpreted it in a way that says you don't have to answer these questions unless you're telling us that someone used the export buyer's credit program. And I certainly see how Judge Stansu reached that conclusion from the language, but I think it's slightly unfair. I mean, I've looked at that language in response to Your Honor's question, and it seems clear to me that Commerce is trying to emphasize that you need to, that the precatory language is essentially saying provide this information for all customers who use the export buyer's, you know, who use the export buyer's credit program of the mandatory respondents. And so Commerce is trying to emphasize that yes, we need everyone. But I don't think what Commerce is saying there is we don't need you to answer these questions if you're not disclosing that someone, that one of the mandatory respondent customers used the export buyer's credit program.
If China reads the questionnaire and they have the impression from their answer that they don't have to answer because these mandatories didn't use it, then that conveys to Commerce that that's how they understood it. So isn't that when you would send a supplemental questionnaire and say, oh, we want this information?
Well,
is that how it normally works? Somebody answers and they tell you how they're interpreting it and answer it that way. Doesn't Commerce come back and say, that's not what we meant?
I would have to look back and see, with respect to the key questions here, which is Commerce's question number six in particular, Commerce's request for a list of correspondent banks. That question six isn't couched in any way. You know, it's not saying if you say that someone is
right.
using the export buyer's credit. They're just saying provide the list. And obviously it's been asking for the list for a long time and getting denied the list.
What do you think about the fact that the way the program works, the respondents, mandatory respondents, would know if their customers are using the program, their direct customers?
Right. Just one point, because I don't want to skip it over,
okay.
is that no one is making the argument here, I think. I'm not sure whether the parties made it in Yama, but I don't think there's been an argument here about that questionnaire and that, you know, I mean, that's really not something the parties raised.
No, they didn't.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. No, they didn't raise it.
Correct. But I think in that sense that it would be subject to the usual exhaustion and waiver principles, despite the fact that I know Your Honor has every right to raise the issue.
When it gets to EBCP, I don't know what is...
Fair enough.
How much hasn't been exhausted?
Fair enough.
We are all exhausted.
I hear you, Your Honor. So on that,
exhaustion argument.
I'm not sure that a party here raised that specific article that Judge Stansu pointed to, although I'm aware of Mr. Senko's comments that he said that parties raised that we would have known. I think Commerce has respectfully, because of the way this has gone, from Commerce's perspective, and I don't think this is unreasonable or illegitimate, the government of China has withheld kind of the real functioning guidelines to how this program works. And although
they don't want to tell you about their banks,
right? And they don't want to tell us about the banks. So Commerce has been skeptical of that in the past, and I'm not sure that someone here has pointed to the article that Judge Stansu highlighted, which would then give us a chance to respond to that and explain whether Commerce finds that persuasive.
I shall look.
Or not. Fair enough. That's all I ask.
Okay.
That's all I ask, Your Honor. There are also a couple other important differences between this case and Yama, one of which Your Honor previously touched upon, which is the idea that, you know, the export buyer's credit program is not going to apply to ribbons. But what it does apply to, and this is reflected in two places, one place in Yama and one place in the record. In Yama, Judge Stansu points out in Westlaw at page star 5 that it's supposed to be for high-tech equipment. I'd respectfully submit that solar products would fall under the umbrella of high-tech equipment. And as Commerce points out at page 23 of the IDM, based on its previous determinations on this issue and presumably based on the government of China's responses, that the type of things it includes are energy projects. Again, would respectfully submit that solar products...
I don't think anybody is arguing that this program doesn't apply to the products at issue here. I don't think anybody's argued that.
One other difference between this case and Yama Ribbons is that there was some extra reasoning from Commerce that Judge Stansu took issue with that is not present here, But here, here Commerce really focused, if I were to very broadly paraphrase its reasoning, it effectively said, listen, without the list of correspondent banks on the one hand and without a full set of non-use certifications on the other hand, we're really not in a position to verify non-use of the Export Buyer's Credit Program. In the Yamaribbons case, which is older and under a previous reasoning from Commerce, they had what I would call loose language that pointed to other things that they were claiming they weren't getting from the Chinese government, and Judge Stansu pointed out that wasn't a chunk of Judge Stansu's opinion points out ways in which that was not accurate, but that's not really the issue here. I can't say that this is different in terms of the initial questionnaire, and Mr. Senko is correct that there was, and I suppose, Your Honor, I haven't fully answered your question, there was no supplemental questionnaire here. I think the best way to explain that is that Commerce has been asking for the correspondent bank list for a very long time, and I think didn't see the utility in following up with another request.
Okay, so Commerce felt that not getting the answer about the banks was going to be the end of it.
Yes, Your
Honor. Okay, well, they're not getting that far with that reasoning, but okay, I understand why that was a difference. All right.
So to move to Your Honor's third question,
I'm very confused about when MD applies. And it's pretty broadly worded. It sounds like any time you ask for something and you don't get it, you're supposed to send them a deficiency letter.
Well, I think the key here is that Commerce never asked for it. And that's something that Commerce pointed out in its IDM at pages 21 to 22. And that's something that RISN, frankly, in the rest of the context of its Export Buyer's Credit
Program. How do you know? Didn't they give a question like, tell us how you know the program wasn't used? Right. Didn't they have a question kind of like that? They didn't say, send us your certificates, but.
Right. It was information that Commerce didn't ask for. RISN still provided it. This is pages 40 to 41 of RISN's initial questionnaire response. I mean, they did provide it in connection with their answers to one of Commerce's questions and said, here it is. It's still not something that Commerce asked for. And that issue, that particular issue, is something that this court has addressed in Cooper Tire, right? That is a case where there are a couple different quotes in Cooper Tire, both of which are, and we cited them in our brief, but both of which are oriented to the notion that Commerce has no obligation to ask for these certifications. And at the same time, to the extent someone is required to make up for the government.
The one where they didn't put in any certifications, they just didn't do anything, right?
There were, I think, either none or incomplete certifications in Cooper Tire. Right. And so they were saying that Commerce should have, I mean, much in the same way that RISN is here, they were arguing that Commerce should have asked for them if it wanted them. And the court ruled, I'll just quote the court. There are actually two quotes, both on the same issue.
Commerce doesn't basically have to anticipate what you're going to put in. I think that's the essence of Cooper Tire, isn't it?
Well, it says the statute does not require Commerce to ask respondents for supplemental information due to the government of China's non-cooperation. When it says the language of the separate quote, the language of the statute requires that Commerce give the government of China, not any other party, an opportunity to remedy the deficiency. Those are both at page 1317 of Cooper Tire. So the reason that 1677MD doesn't apply is because that applies when Commerce has asked for something and then it gets an inadequate reason. We asked for this, but you haven't given it to us, or you haven't given it to us in a way that is consistent with what we asked. That's not what happened here. I mean, Commerce views this as, you know, this has gone through the courts and the practice has evolved as an accommodative effort. I mean, the court has obviously on a number of occasions asked Commerce to go back and verify, you know, even Commerce's original position is we're not going to do anything if the government of China isn't going to comply.
I don't consider this an accommodation. Government of China doesn't answer. That creates what looks to be a vacuum. Somebody fills in the vacuum. You can't draw an adverse inference if you have actual evidence. It's only an inference. So if you have evidence that is sufficient to fill it in, then there's no adverse inference to be drawn. That's, you're looking for information. You're not looking for information to punish people who deal with China. You're just looking for information. So if you get the information, you can't draw an adverse inference. It's already been rebutted.
So
That's how I see it.
I understand Your Honor's perspective, and I would say that Commerce's current practice is consistent with that perspective as you articulated, in the sense that if there is a gap in the record, Commerce doesn't ask for these certifications, but if it gets a complete set of certifications that fills the gap in the record, it will proceed to issue the supplemental questionnaire.
In this case, they asked a general question, and the certifications were in response to that general question. Am I wrong there?
I'm not.
Just a second. Let me find out the exact question.
Sure. I know it's at pages 40 to 41 of the initial questionnaire response.
Somebody's going to put the question in front of my face. They did ask the question. Maybe it's in my. You probably wrote it there. Yeah. There it is. Okay. Here's the question. If you claim none of your customers use buyer credits during the POR, please explain in detail the steps you took to determine that no customer used the buyer credit facility, whatever that means. So you did make a question. They came back with some certificates, I guess.
Right, an incomplete.
It was incomplete, yes. So then the question is that enough of a question that when they answered with the certificates, you should have come back and say, hey, if this is the way you're going to respond, give us the rest of the certificates. That's my problem here. Right. You asked the question. Of course, now maybe Commerce will never ask a question and we'll get terrible. Terrible right. Investigation.
But I think the sure answer is no. I mean, I understand Your Honor's point that they asked a general question and that these were provided in response to that. I don't think that's the same as specifically asking for it to trigger 1677 MD, particularly in a world where then they're responding and providing an incomplete list of certificates. I don't think that triggers a legal obligation under the statute and regulations on Commerce's part to then ask for specific materials that it didn't ask, that it didn't originally ask for.
Okay.
I mean, I could see, I think as lawyers, we could all spin in our heads instances where that approach could be problematic. If any time Commerce asks a general question and someone tries to provide something, that triggers
but
a deficiency
the
as if Commerce had asked.
The things provide are exactly the things we now know today Commerce is paying attention to. It's
right.
Not some junk. It's what Commerce is now paying attention to.
Well, I think that goes to Your Honor's fourth question, and I think we respectfully disagree with a number of the characterizations that RISN offered in response to that question. I mean, maybe the place to start is with the documents themselves.
I think they answered the question, and they didn't do it immediately, and they didn't think it was going to do them any good.
Right. Well, I think it's worth being specific on that first issue. We went back in response to Your Honor's question, and I think Your Honor has put your finger on something with that question. We went back and looked at that rejected questionnaire response in the certificate. I brought the documents here because they're not part of the joint appendix of the parties, didn't cite them in the briefing, and I have enough copies to provide it to the parties and the clerk if we get there and it's necessary. And in fact, I think I probably should, but let me say a few words.
I think you will.
The certification that was submitted on December 13th as part of the rejected, untimely, preliminary questionnaire, it's dated, I mean, this is all the information Commerce has, it's dated June 21st, 2021, the date on which the original questionnaire response was submitted. And I should note that that's not a form thing because the other certifications have different dates on them as well. So the best information we have is that it was first submitted to RISN sometime on or around June 21st, 2021. The last day for RISN to submit new factual information, aside from responding to the questionnaire, would have been 30 days before the preliminary results, which issued on January 6th, 2022. So RISN could have submitted additional information up to December, up to approximately December 7th, 2021.
That's what I don't understand about this business about being able to submit information within 30 days of the preliminary. Isn't it really limited what you can submit within 30 days of the preliminary?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with those regulations in a way that I feel like I can speak intelligently to them. I mean,
really?
I,
you come here and you're not familiar with the regulations on submitting data to Commerce? Come on.
I'm just not conversant to the particular CVD regulations. As Your Honor discussed in the colloquy, there's a catch-all provision, but more importantly, no one asked. What I can say is that when one looks at the questionnaire response,
when Commerce says we reject it because it wasn't within 30 days of the preliminary, I'm not sure what they would ever accept within 30 days in the preliminary in a CVD case, except for this benchmark stuff. Anyway, but you can't talk about it. You can't talk about it.
Well, what I can say is, Your Honor, is that I have that questionnaire response, and maybe it's the appropriate time for me to distribute the pages from the relevant pages from the questionnaire response and then the certification itself. Okay. And it looks to me like what RISN tried to do is just kind of slip it in.
Is that what I just looked at?
It's not part of the joint appendix.
Okay. If it's not part of the joint appendix, I don't have it.
That's right.
But it's part of the record, so I'm happy to have it.
It's part of the record. I should say it's rejected and retained by
the that thing. Okay. Okay.
And
it's part of the record of what was rejected.
Right. Well, it's retained for the purposes of discussing why it's rejected, which
exactly.
is exactly
and
what
I
we're doing.
I encourage parties to do this.
And here is the certification itself. And I'll pass to everyone. May I approach the clerk?
Sure. Okay. So this is, you're giving me one.
This is the untimely
thingamajig.
I can also give Your Honor the PRCR number and barcode. My understanding is that the court has access to access at this point, so I think Your Honor could pull up the full
document. Is our access to access working? Sometimes.
Fair enough. We're
just like everybody else out there in the world. Sometimes our access accesses and sometimes it doesn't. Okay.
So
here's the famous certification that was rejected.
Which I think the important thing there is the date. And then you can see the questionnaire response itself, which page 6 to 7 of this pre-preliminary comment. And look, they just slipped it in, right? They said, our certifications are in Exhibit 1 or Exhibit 20. They don't mention that we actually slipped in an extra certification that you didn't have previously. It looks to us like they forgot it or they weren't able to get it in and then just tried to slip it in after the fact. No one went to Commerce and said, listen, we know we're missing a certification. Here's our missing certification. We'd like to submit it to you. I cannot, Your Honor, say that Commerce would have been obstinate or rejected a request to submit a final non-use certification that Commerce hadn't requested to begin with. I mean, I can't promise that they would have accepted it, but when Commerce is in a position where no one even attempts to ask about it and then just slips it in untimely after the fact, I mean, they at least could have submitted it by December 7th.
You're kind of making an accusation there, and I will let counsel come back and respond to your accusation, which is what it sounds like.
Fair enough. Your Honor, I don't mean to make an accusation, but what I am saying is, as far as Commerce can tell, they submitted it without any fanfare, and it appears that they'd had it for months. I would say that in the interim, for example, and I'm just going off of what RISN said in its response brief, its reply brief in this case, two things. They acknowledged that there had been, well, three things, Your Honor. First of all, it is 100% the case that parties by this point had started submitting non-use certifications for all their customers in order to demonstrate non-use of the export buyer's credit program. I understand that jurisprudence was in flux, but Your Honor well knows from the 2017 case that RISN submitted non-use certifications for all its customers in that case, and that was the 2017 case. This is the 2019 case. Second, RISN concedes in its reply brief that there have been other cases where Commerce received full non-use certifications that had proceeded to supplemental questionnaires. It argues that Commerce's jurisprudence on that was, or Commerce's reasoning on that, it wasn't clear that they were doing it because of the non-use certifications, but that's what they say in their reply brief. And the third thing is that RISN points out, and this is only clear to me, at least after listening to RISN's remarks today, that RISN says, well, we had pointed to, just as an example of a case where Commerce moved to supplemental questionnaires after non-use certifications, this MAE from China case, and RISN points out that that came out in October 2021, and that was not, that was not available to us in June 2021 when we first submitted our non-use certifications in the case, but it was certainly out before the record in this case closed in December 2021. And that's the MAE from China, and I suspect that is, I don't know, but I suspect that that's not the only case that would have occurred between June and December 2021. But at the very least, there's that one. And they distinguish it, but that's certainly an instance where Commerce, that we cited in our brief about okay. Commerce's practice. So for all those reasons, I do think it's very unfair to Commerce to say that, RISN had no reason or no basis to, if it knew that it had a certification that it wanted to submit, to simply submit it without any fanfare, untimely, even untimely, not just untimely in terms of we didn't get it into that questionnaire response, but prior to the close of the record in the CBD proceedings. And as Your Honor said, I mean, there's always the possibility of doing the dance to say, hey, we have this thing we want to submit. Can you accept it? But
no, that's not what they do. The dance is they have to ask you to ask a question. Otherwise, they don't get it in. It's not, dear Commerce, please take this. That's not how it works.
Right. No, I understand. Dear Commerce, can you please request? Can you? We have this document. Can you please request it from us? But Commerce is not in a position.
And I don't know that there's any regulation that would have allowed this to file it after the time for response to the questionnaire. And they needed, if they wanted to put it in, they needed to do the dance. That's how it works.
Fair enough. No dancing occurred. Okay. I mean, Commerce received this untimely, as far as I understand, Commerce received this untimely without any.
I'm repetitious now. Can you wrap up your part of this?
Nothing further on this, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gerland.
Oh, right. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I misspoke. I should, because you may be able to access it in Access, I should give you the PRCR and barcode numbers for that document.
All right.
They are PR340, CR495, and barcode number 4190811. And, of course, the barcode should be on the top of the document as well. And then what is in the record is Commerce's rejection of the document, which is at PR 342. Your Honor has that in the appendix.
Here, Colin, so we don't lose him. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Got it. All right. You say he didn't follow the statute. He says you were sneaky.
thinking of that, like, what would be any benefit to RISN to try to not submit this as possible? I mean, we had no reason to not want it on the record or to submit it in December late. Like, there's not a reason why we would have wanted it submitted in December and not earlier.
So it's dated in June. So what happened? You just didn't
We didn't receive it in time to submit for this questionnaire. The fact that it was dated that day doesn't mean...
So when did you actually receive it from this customer?
I'm not positive when RISN received it.
Okay. No.
We know it wasn't in time to file the questionnaire response because that was part of the reason we even wanted an extension in the first case, was to put these certifications in our questionnaire. So first, the reg, I mean, I think we've gone back and forth on this, but there's nothing in that in the regulation 351.01 that would allow us to...
Commerce talks as if people can slide in this information
30
days before the preliminary determination, but I don't see that in the regulation.
And Commerce is extremely strict about that. We have information rejected as a common occurrence.
Okay, so
if you try to submit something.
Why doesn't RISN know when it got this from its customer?
I mean, it did receive it, in the summertime. I can ask for an exact date, but I mean, our position is that it wouldn't make a difference whether we received it at 5:01 p.m. on the 21st of June or we received it the day before we submitted it, because at no time in that did Commerce ask for this questionnaire. Asked for these certs, and they did issue us questionnaires, and none of them were related to the EBC program.
So if you committed an error, the error was when you got it, you didn't ask Commerce to ask you for it.
Yes, and that gets to what I reiterated at the beginning, that at the time, no one was looking at these certifications. We had submitted them all in the review before, and Commerce found the exact same conclusion, complete AFA doesn't matter. And in all of the court precedent, the judges were not looking at, did you submit all the certifications? How much of your sales does this represent? That was not before the court. That was not what was considered at all at that time period. It was not until last year and earlier this year's remand in the 2017 case that these types of details are coming up.
Are you talking about my case, Judge Eaton's case?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, yes, we're sitting here and we have hindsight. Of course we would want to try to submit it earlier and ask, but that was not the climate at the time.
Okay, we got other issues.
I would like to make two quick notes on distinguishing. I'll just point you to our brief for the sake of time, but our reply brief at page 4 and 6, we distinguished a couple examples that DOJ gives of other up times that Commerce was issuing these EBC supplemental questionnaires. And in none of those instances did Commerce say we're only issuing this because all of your customers provided certifications. That fact pattern had not occurred at all during this review. So no, in July and October and November, there had not been a case where Commerce said we're only issuing you this supplemental questionnaire on the EBC because every single one of your customers issued a certification. That had not occurred, so there was no factual knowledge for us to avoid.
Once you put in the certifications,
I mean,
what other question is there for them to ask? You put in the certification, they can ask that they want to verify.
Right. Well, you have seen in the 2017 RISN case before you that they've issued that detailed supplemental questionnaire asking, give us all your loan information.
Oh, okay.
Give us your chart of accounts. Give
us
your financials.
By that time.
Commerce saying that they would have issued that questionnaire to us if we had provided all the certifications.
Okay. I don't know if that's a questionnaire or if that's verification.
It's a pre-verification, but according to Commerce, you could also verify that information directly on the record without that proceeding.
Okay,
in our reply brief, we just distinguished those examples that no, RISN was not on notice that it had to have submitted all these certifications to address whether it had used this program or not. In the questionnaire, RISN said, we asked all of our customers, they all said they did not use this program. Here's an illustrative example of certifications, because they did not have one. So that was their response, and Commerce was fully able to then go back and say that was not adequate, because despite the fact that they keep saying we did not ask for this information, we did not ask for certifications, they've made it a threshold. So if they made it a threshold deficiency, then they need to ask for this information and recognize that deficiency. And just to conclude on this point, Your Honor is very aware of EBC cases. And in each instance, Commerce's approach to this program is to not confront information and to delay, in our opinion, any legitimate inquiry into the customers, into whether this program was used, And this is just another example of Commerce not looking at the information on the record.
One of these days, we're going to get to the end of this. Okay. Yes. Thank you on
Thank
that
you.
Question. Colin? Do you have anything you want me to ask them? Do we want anything else from them? I don't think so. Okay. All right, let's move along. What's the next issue we want to address?
I can address Your Honor's question on land, the leases.
I think we've had enough DBCP.
No, leases.
Oh, what do you want to do now?
The land.
You want to do land?
Yes.
Okay, land. Let's do land. We have other issues besides land.
And just on EPC, Your Honor, page 2-3 of our reply brief is for the exhaustion, your question on exhaustion, look at pages 2-3 in our reply brief.
Okay. All right.
That should resolve the exhaustion.
That should resolve the problem? All right.
Hopefully.
Let me ask you another question that's not on the list.
Sure.
These are 50-year leases. Government talks about them as purchases. I don't know if they're saying that because a 50-year lease is like a purchase. I don't know. But are payments made every year on the leases?
So there's two different types, Your Honor. You can purchase land use rights, which are the equivalent of essentially what we would consider buying the property.
How did you just describe that?
There's land use rights. Essentially, the government has right to the land. You purchase that
land,
and it's the equivalent of purchasing. But there's also the equivalent of a lease. You could lease from another company. You could lease space. And that's the equivalent of what we would consider a rent or a lease.
And which one is 50 years?
The land use rights.
That's a 50-year thing.
Yeah.
And there's actual leases that are shorter term.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times the leases are from, company to company. It might not be from government to government. So, in this case, we have a couple where a company's leasing space from another, office space.
All right. So explain to me what we have in this case.
Sure. And so, Your Honor's questions are the land lease countervails in 2017 distinct from the land leases here? And the answer is no. That's the J.A. Solar's exact point, is that in 2017, the land leases, they treated as a non-recurring program. And this
is this one of these land use rights 50-year things?
No, these are separate. There are the 50 years, but these are the leases, between company to company or that. And they treated them as non-recurring. And then in this most recent review, they reevaluated. Admittedly, that wasn't argued. I'll make that clear. We didn't argue that in the review before. And then in this review, they decided, okay, we're going to treat those leases as a recurring program. It's consistent with our regulation. But Commerce declined to change its benefit stream from 2017 to account for those, that it's now changed its how it views those leases.
Okay. So there's a lease.
Yeah.
There's a payment every year on the lease.
Yep.
That is considered recurring.
Correct. And that's no one's
And
deciding.
So the benefit that's gained from that recurring lease is attributed all to this 1 year. I would call it expense. I don't know.
That's exactly the term, Your Honor. Yes.
So, but in addition to that, you have the leftover effect from 2017, and you've got a value thrown in there you've got a benefit value thrown in there in addition to the expensed amount.
Yes. And so what they do with the 50-year, which is a separate issue, is they treat it as, the reason they're allocating it is because the benefit, so you pay it, they're saying the benefit's not assigned every year, they're going to assign it year by year, and they have an allocation stream, and they do the allocation stream. With the leases, they've now found it to be, again, separate from the 50. The leases, they've now found to be recurring. And if you're looking backwards,
I thought I understood you, but now I don't understand.
Sorry.
Okay. Just talk about one piece of land at a time.
Okay.
One piece of land. What is it?
A piece of land is the 50-year.
Okay,
land
it's a 50-year.
Yeah.
How do they treat that?
They treat that as essentially a non-recurring. They find a benefit for it. And then they allocate that benefit from year to year.
And have they ever made that recurring?
No, those are not.
Okay. So those were non-recurring, and they're still non-recurring.
Correct. Yep.
Something happened on a piece of something other than the land use rights 50-year deal.
Yes.
Something happened on a lease
correct.
That is not that.
Correct.
And it was declared non-recurring, and now it's declared recurring, and they have the leftover benefit from the non-recurring, and they've got the new benefit from the recurring.
Correct.
So you're claiming double benefit.
Exactly, Your Honor. We're saying that either pulling over a benefit that really never should have been assigned, and our argument in our brief, too, is if you actually go back to 6AR and use the correct lease benchmark, the government's concern is, okay, you're losing some of that allocation.
What are they losing?
In their mind, they're treating it as that they only allocated a certain amount of the benefit in 6AR, even though it's a separate land issue. So they're saying that, you know, they're missing some of the benefit because you pull forward the benefit. Does that make sense?
No, I don't get that. If they're calling it recurring and the payment for this year,
yeah,
versus the benchmark and the difference is considered a recurring benefit,
correct.
Then they've got all the benefit on that lease.
Correct.
What do they think they're missing?
They think they're missing because they treated it as non-recurring instead of recurring. They would have had more benefit in 6AR had they would have assigned more as a lease.
Oh, back in 17, they would have. Well, what do I care about 17?
That's our point. Your point is, Your Honor, that it should be, you should get rid of that because they're now pulling it forward when it's been found to be not a recurring program.
So they botched it for an earlier year.
Correct, but they are now pulling forward that benefit that never. So they botched it in an earlier year. We're not disagreeing with that because we didn't argue that. But then they pull forward some of that benefit to the current year, and they don't need to do that if it was a lease. They never should have pulled it forward in the first place. And to the government's point, they're concerned like...
Well, just a second. I don't care what they did in 17
mm-hmm.
for either side. I don't care. That's a different case.
Okay.
I only care about what's in this case. In this case, it's a recurring benefit.
Correct.
You calculate it as a recurring benefit. If they should have done that before, that's fine. If they shouldn't have done that before, that's fine. I don't care about 17. But I do care if in this review you're getting today you are getting a rate that includes double benefit.
And that's exactly, they're not expensing the leases from past years because they said we can't.
They don't have to expense the leases from past years. They can do whatever they did in past years. And if by changing, they're losing some little piece of benefit. Well, you didn't tell them to change, or maybe you did tell them to change. But, you know, you said these are recurring. So.
Yes.
So you told them to change, and they did.
Correct, but they didn't change for all. They're still giving you a benefit from these past leases. But
I understand that. And they decided to change. I don't see how they can do that.
Well, under TOSILIS, if there's a clear error, they can now go back and say, we did it wrong. We're not going to change it in the past, but we're going to expense them and get rid of them and not treat them as a benefit for this year. Essentially, those payments would be expensed out, and it wouldn't be added into your benefit calculation because of the leases.
I guess I don't understand you. If it's recurring, you calculate it for each year. You look at how much payment they made,
correct.
How much payment they would have made if they weren't getting a sweet deal,
yep.
And that's the benefit. Now, if they decided in some past year to treat it as non-recurring and then allocate a certain amount of the benefit for each year, and then they change their mind and now they're going to do it a different way, well, I don't care about those past years. Not okay. For you and not for them.
Okay.
I mean, I don't see it.
So in the TOSCO's case, it says that you can care about those past years.
It says I can?
If it's a clear error. And here it was a clear error that they treated it as non. You can correct.
Why do I want to correct?
Because the leases they've now found are recurring, and they treated them as non-recurring. There shouldn't have been
should have given you more benefit in the prior year.
Correct, yes. But
why do I care? That's closed.
But they're still pulling forward that benefit.
I'm saying they can't.
Okay. Oh, you're saying they can't. Okay.
Well,
then we're
on
the same page.
How can they double benefit this year?
Well, that's what's occurring. They're pulling forward some of the leases.
I guess he's going to tell me how they can do that. I was thinking it was different pieces of land, but this is the same leases.
Correct.
You're saying it's the same leases.
Yes. It's.
They created a mess when they changed.
Yep.
But that's. Okay, let me have a powwow here.
Okay.
The way I see this logically is if you have these land purchases and those are non-recurring, there should be a piece of benefit for those land leases that goes forward under this allocation.
Agreed.
And then for leases, if they're recurring, there should be a benefit attributable to those leases. And then what do they do? Throw it all together in one big calculation?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They add them all together and divide by your total sales.
Okay, but they have individual benefits and they can add them together. What you want is you want them to take out the part of the benefit that they threw in on the leases, not the purchase rights, because they're now giving you the whole, you're basically picking up the whole benefit for each year on the cheap rent for that year.
Exactly, Your Honor. Apologies, I couldn't get that correct.
That's how I understand it, and the government can tell me what and how they see it differently.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Good afternoon, Your Honor. Joshua Kurland again for the government, and may it please the court. The first way we see this differently, Your Honor, it is that we have affirmatively requested remand on this land issue, and I think it's fair to say we don't think the court needs to reach this part of the issue, which is kind of a sub part of the issue, at this point in the case, given that there seems to be a significant chance that Commerce's determination is going to change as a result of the remand we requested. The primary issue in the case.
But you just want a remand on the Thai versus Malaysia.
That's right. And there's going to be a recalculation on that issue. And in transparency, I don't know that that would affect this recurring, non-recurring issue. Although I'm prepared to get into the weeds on it, I think the best way to look at it from kind of a legal perspective is it's kind of a law of the case issue. I think where we're getting hung, where the colloquy has gotten hung up is that, I know Your Honor probably knows a lot of this. When Commerce determines that a benefit is non-recurring, it allocates that benefit over the life of the
Right. So every
project.
Time they do a review, they throw that in.
That's right. And then.
So they're thinking when they do it that way that they're going to have it forever.
Right. So
what if they change their mind?
So for the, well, Commerce didn't change their mind.
Oh, they did.
With respect to the previous determination. What happened here is that, first of all, Your Honor asked, is it the same issue?
No, I asked, is it the same piece of land? And he said, no, there's two kinds of piece of land. There's the basically, essentially a purchase, because it's forever, from China. And those you're still treating as a non-recurring benefit. Okay. Then he says there's these other things. There's these leases. And they used to be treated as non-recurring, and now they're treating it as recurring. Is that right?
Mostly, Your Honor.
What's wrong?
I think the difference is that there were a certain number of purchases or leases that were made between, let's say, 2001 and 2017 that were covered by the 2017 review. In that review, Commerce determined that the benefits, based on the record of that review, that the benefits that JA Solar received from those leases between 2001 and 2017 were non-recurring benefits and allocated them that way. That creates what is referred to as a benefit stream, which ends up affecting future reviews. There were what is different, I think, both formally and informally different between this case and the 2017 case is now it's 2 years later, and there were different leases. I'm not even sure whether they're on the same property, but I don't know the answer for that for sure.
If it's different leases, you can do it differently with no problem. Okay. If it's the same lease and you didn't expense it and now you expense it, you got a problem. And your problem is you're going to lose the allocation stream if you suddenly change your method for that same lease.
Right. So I think for our understanding here, or certainly our purposes here, these are two different sets of leases. Commerce, for this review, in the 2018, for leases that were made in 2018 and 2019, determined to treat, based on the record that was before it in this case, determined to treat those leases, the 2018 and 19.
Hey, if they're different leases, fine. I have no problem with that.
Right.
My problem is if it's the same leases.
That's our view of it, or at least it's a different lease purchase. Or I guess benefit, I don't know what the right word is.
Okay.
A lease purchase, I think, is an appropriate word.
If you have a lease that you treat it as non-recurring and you then allocate it forever, and then you switch to treat it as recurring and you charge and you expense the whole rent payment, then you can't keep on with the old allocation. If it's a different lease, it's a different lease.
Right.
I don't want to see on a remand you do this Thai Malaysia thing, and then you double dock them on the same lease. I don't want to see any double docking on the same lease. Do I have to put that in an opinion?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I don't see any double counting going on here. What Commerce refused to do, I think quite appropriately so, is not to reopen its 2017 determination.
They don't have to reopen 17. Its question is, what are they going to do in this case? And in this case, if they're going to expense the whole lease, that's all the benefit they get to calculate for that particular lease. And if they had previously decided for that lease, they had some allocation, they can't have the allocation and the whole expense in this lease. You can't double dock them. If it's different leases, it's different leases. I don't care.
It may in fact be different leases.
Okay.
But I would say, as I'm standing here, I'm just thinking of
I'm going to have
example.
To give you an advisory opinion and tell you, don't do it. I don't want to see it.
What I would liken this to, for example, the first thing I think of when I try to provide a clear understanding of what's going on here, or at least how we see it, is like an ongoing tort situation. Like, let's say that someone's engaging in, I don't know, a nuisance tort, just to go back to law school, and they committed that nuisance tort between 2001 and 2017, and the Department of Commerce, and there has been a judgment against them that says your liability is $100,000 for your act of nuisance between 2001 and 2017. That's closed, and that's law of the case. Then they continue the nuisance tort. They get sued by the same party again for their activities in 2018 and 2019. And the court, in resolving that dispute with its own factual record and determination, we're not talking about res judicata and things like that here, comes to a determination that treats the nuisance slightly differently. There are different acts. There are additional acts. It's not the same whatever it was, smoke or dogs or whatever.
It's a different act. It's a different lease. Better be different leases. You can't double up the benefit in this review. You can't double up the benefit. You just can't do that. I don't care what you did in 17. So you made it, what do I care? I have this review in front of me, and you can't double up the benefit in this review. I don't know how you want to get there, but that's That's what you do. You can't double up the benefit. Not, I mean, it just makes no sense. Anyway.
Well, again, Commerce isn't trying to double
right,
any benefit.
Do we want to talk a little bit about Malaysia and Thailand? I think you have this new, what you want is you want a remand so that you can put in your new way of doing it. It's not an explanation of some old way. It's you want a whole new way. And your new way is when you have these long-term leases, you want to look for who was, which data is closer in time to the time that the lease agreement was made. Okay. And therefore, if it's Thai, you're going to land on the cheap Thai land. If it's Malaysia, I think you're going to end up on the expensive Malaysian land. Okay. I'm not sure any of this makes sense, but they haven't done it yet. I would like, you know, once upon a time, Commerce decided to average Thai and Malaysia, and they never, ever said that, well, the reason we want to average these is Thai is cheap and Malaysia's high, scarcity of land in Malaysia, blah, blah, plenty of cheap land in Thailand. I don't know. That's just a hypothetical. I don't know if it's true. But they've never given any reason for wanting to average those two. Now it sounds like they don't want to average. They just want to go with whatever's closer in time to the time of the purchase. Right?
Yes, Your Honor, with a couple caveats.
What's the caveat?
Well, I think what Commerce said at the time, and they didn't explain it significantly, and that's something Your Honor pointed out, is that they thought it was more robust to use two data sources rather than one, and that was consistent with, for example, in a Tier 2 benchmark, which obviously precedes Tier 3, Commerce's regulations
but why
say
more
better
robust?
To use more.
It's not necessarily more robust to use two. It might be if they are covering a spectrum.
I think Commerce
you know, more robust is not an answer. It just doesn't, it's not detailed enough to provide me with an answer.
I that's what Your Honor said at the time, and I'm not here to defend it because Your Honor remanded it then.
Yeah, I wanted them to tell me why two, why these two. How do you get to a better answer by having these two? If one is crummy and one is good, putting them together is not a better answer. If they both have validity, putting them together might be a good answer. Anyway,
so,
but now we got a new thing they want to do, and you want to remand to do this new thing.
Well, a couple points there. I think the main concern about the Thai data, it's really not a fair concern here. It's not part of what we speak about unless there's an argument that it's aberrational to say that one's lower and one's higher, so that's what we should choose.
But no, that may be why you want to put them together. That would be a reason to put them together. Is if you have cheap land over here and expensive land over here and they're both in Asia, maybe putting them together makes it closer to China. I have no idea. I'm just saying that that's the kind of reasoning you would want to hear if there were facts to support it. It's just a hypothetical.
Fair enough. And I take your hypothetical, Your Honor, and obviously we as the attorneys are just left with what Commerce said, which as they said it was more robust. I took that to mean two data points better than one. I understand Your Honor isn't satisfied by that, and we're not here to defend it, so I'm not going to belabor that point. But, Your Honor, I think what the court and the parties have discussed is the primary issue affecting the Thai data that made it non-satisfactory to use was the notion that it was stale because it was from 2010.
That's right.
And what Commerce realized as part of the 2017 review is that, and I should say, to get in the weeds slightly, it made this, what they did ultimately, most recently in the 2017 review, which as Your Honor knows, we're briefing at the moment, so it's still subject to Your Honor's review, it may be closer to what they were doing in their actual calculation than the way they were articulating it. So what they are saying in that 2017 review may not be a great departure from the calculations, but it's clearly different than what they were saying.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. But what Commerce came to realize in the 2017 case that the more appropriate way to handle it, particularly since contemporaneity is a concern, is to use the data that is most contemporaneous to the year in which they're applying it to the land purchase or lease. So that's why in that review, the Commerce did is for the years that were closer to the 2010 TIE data, it used the TIE data because...
I don't know that this is going to fly for them. I'm only concerned right now about the new case.
Right.
You know, sometimes, talk about law of the case, sometimes things go too far down the road and your remand is limited.
Right.
So we're talking about what kind of remand we're going to have here. And you want a gazillion miles wide remand. You just want to look at land again. You want to be able to do it a new way. You want to do it, well, you say it's not a new way, but it looks like you want to do it in a way that's never been argued before.
Sure, Your Honor.
We'll put it that way. All right. So you want a really broad remand to be able to do whatever you want on land.
Well, I think Commerce, realizing that it took a new approach in the 2017 case, realized that what it did in this case was out of step with its practice and approach. And Your Honor had already remanded.
I remanded it for an explanation. That's all I remanded it for. Commerce may have gone beyond the remand.
Fair enough. But obviously, we'll brief that, and Your Honor will rule on it.
Okay, but this case is this case, and you have a chance to get a broad remand if I choose to do so. So I guess I'm going to hear from the other side on land now.
Well, Your Honor, what I would say is just that to the extent that there's a contemporaneity issue with respect to the Thai data, there's equally a contemporaneity issue with respect to the Malaysian data.
There may be.
For going back. Commerce is just looking... for an opportunity to reevaluate the determination, and I suspect it's always difficult when there are competing cases going on at the same time, but if Your Honor rules in the 2017 case, I don't think Commerce is going to ignore what Your Honor says in that case if the remand is ongoing.
I may rule in that case that you're stuck. I may rule that whatever you did there doesn't matter. Because too far down the road. That may be an outcome. The 2017, we may never even get to this issue. I have no idea. You guys will finish your briefing. But we may not even get to this issue in the 2017 case. What I want to know is you want a broad remand to definitely get to the issue in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. In this sense, the issue is very much live. Commerce has to value land. Commerce did in this case what Your Honor previously remanded in the 2017 case.
No, they didn't do what I said. They did something new.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I should have been clear. Commerce in this case did, the 2017 case is up to its second remand.
Right.
Commerce in this case did what they also did on the first remand in the 2017
exactly.
case, which Your Honor has now remanded again to Commerce.
Right, because they didn't give me an explanation. That's why I remanded it. They didn't tell me why the TIE data was good.
And I think Commerce.
And now they have some reason why it's good, which is not an explanation of why it was good before.
Well, I think Your Honor's main concern with the TIE data was that it was stale, and Commerce took that concern to heart and basically said, "You're right, it is stale." And so we realized that what we should be doing is using the data that is the most contemporaneous to the particular
It was stale only in the sense that, as I read the determination, they were looking for data from the period of review, and it wasn't contemporaneous with the period of review. Okay, now they're thinking, putting on thinking cap, we should have been thinking about how to measure the benefit at the time of the lease agreement.
That's correct.
That's a new idea, not expressed previously.
Yes.
I don't know what we're going to do in that case. They want to look. They want to I don't know what we're talking about here. You want a big, broad remand to do that and whatever else you want to do with regard to straightening out what you don't seem to think is a possibility of double counting or not, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think two issues. That's two separate. Those are two related issues, but they're two parts of the issue. On the first issue, I think my reaction would be, I understand it's a new idea, but I think, you know, in a positive sense, Commerce is pursuing this because Commerce came to the realization that it's in the interest of accuracy to match the data to the year in which, I mean, Commerce is,
This may be a fine answer for this case. Can I hear from the other side? All I'm getting for you is the same arguments right now. We're being a little repetitious. Why don't you sit down? I want
to
hear from the other
Thank
side.
You.
Okay. Does anybody want to talk about Thailand and Malaysia?
I mean, just say briefly, Your Honor.
I mean, you can also rebut. He says it's different leases.
I will leave the leases, I think, Your Honor. It is different leases in that it's leases from the current review versus leases from the past review. But I will leave that. On the land benchmark, I think we...
I don't... Stop.
Okay.
Stop. We have leases.
Correct.
Were those leases previously treated as a non-recurring benefit, and are those same leases now treated as a recurring benefit?
No.
Okay, fine. You and he agree. We're done with that. All right. Now, you guys agree. It's different leases. All right, I'm no longer bothered. Okay. Jeez. Okay, now talk about Thailand and Malaysia.
I think it's tough to talk, Your Honor, because we're not sure what Commerce would do. We would agree that there is, if we're going off of the TOR, the Thai data is stale. If Commerce is going to do what it's going to do in the prior review, it's going to look at the date of purchase instead of the POR. I don't necessarily want to comment. I don't know if that's what Commerce will do. Our concern in that review was more on notice and how we would put a benchmark source if you're changing going from the POR to the date
yes.
of land.
Okay.
I will say in this review we don't have, it's proprietary, so I'm speaking generally, we don't, at least for us, have those notice concerns because just the way the land purchases worked out, there aren't, we likely wouldn't have changed our benchmark source, but in the prior review we may have. So that was the concern.
Okay, so
but we're,
you wouldn't have changed your benchmark source. So you're not saying I should tell them to reopen the record to get new benchmark sources from you?
Correct.
You're not asking for that?
No. Okay. And that was the argument in the prior review. In this
I don't care about the prior
yes.
review, and I wouldn't care about this one.
Yes, and that's where...
All right.
Good.
Because if you want me to order them to reopen the record, I have to go through a big song and dance about whether
no.
this is unusual, extraordinary.
No.
Okay.
No.
Good. Fine. I don't want to do that.
Then that, unless Your Honor has other
questions. No. I don't think. Everybody happy? Mr. Curlin, if you want to say something brand new, you can talk. Otherwise, no.
I have nothing.
Okay. I'm done with land. What's next? Oh, you had a land question? Oh, yeah. No, I think Ocean Freight is just a remand,
yeah,
right?
We don't have.
Okay, Descartes may be great stuff for AD cases.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for CBD. So, okay. Yeah, okay. I will tell you right now what I think of the government's argument that this tax provision is a de jure benefit. I mean, is de jure... really. I find this argument, based on what I've seen so far, frivolous. This is in no way a de jure subsidy. It just isn't. Maybe the government is not making a frivolous argument because it has something else to tell me. But based on the briefs, this is a total loser and not even arguable. It's just a tax program which is available to anybody who happens to do this. I mean, it's really nuts. I mean, if you had something like, you have like carbon offsets and there's only like two companies who can use it, then you can have a de facto. But you don't have a de jure. So anyway, now you've heard my opinion on that. Does anybody want to talk about this? Okay. That is a total loser. Government can have its two remands. The land one will be a broad remand. You can do whatever you want. And EBCP will be taken care of. Anything else? All right.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Court stands adjourned.